several years ago. As many of you know, I had a wonderful opportunity as a young man to go off on my own in Austria, not knowing German, but certainly knowing what a charming mountain scene looks like, wandering amongst the mountains, the rivers, the hills, the lakes. How does the soul not experience the presence of God in a very particular and powerful way in such a beautiful, beautiful landscape? Beautiful, quaint little churches nestled in between the hills and the rivers, with towers and an onion-shaped bulb that points upward to the heavens, and in some mysterious fashion draws heaven down to us. I was mesmerized. And in a situation such as that, it's funny that one thing might stick out because the whole is so beautiful and harmonious. But there was something in this midst of everything being highlighted with a sense of grace and serenity, of calm, of peace. Something caught my attention. And at first I didn't know what it was. It looked like a garden. It looked like a garden. There were pebbles and stones meticulously arranged, little curbs, beautiful ironwork throughout the little land area that I was looking at. And I soon realized it was unlike anything that I had seen before, even though in that moment it dawned on me that it was a cemetery. Beautiful, curated, manicured flowers all over the graves. And this is ordinary there. Flowers and ironwork, beautiful crosses and crucifixes adorning these tombs, these graves. One, it's different, unlike the grassy meadow cemeteries that we have here because of all of the land. It's mountainous. There's not as much land in these old villages, so naturally it has to take a different shape, a different cup for the liquid of their culture to fill, a different form. But it was beautiful, and it was striking to me. And I thought, how strange that something so beautiful should adorn something so awful and ugly. But then it dawned upon me in that moment that it was symbolic. These crosses of black ironwork boldly standing in protest to the world, in protest of that which we think would be over, that which is ugly, that there is a love that has overcome even this thing, a love that bears all things and endures all things, a love that hopes all things, a love that never fails, a love that creates and heals, restores, and has overcome the grave, a love stronger than death. And that beautiful ironwork in those flowers proclaimed that boldly without words in that serene and majestic landscape. It was powerful. Today, my brothers and sisters, we hear overwhelmingly these stories from our first reading, our gospel, to love our enemies. To love our enemies. And this is certainly very resonant and has a necessary intrinsic connection to forgiveness. For our enemies are those who have harmed us, who are a threat to us, who threaten our sense of stability and peace and calm. And for most of us, I know I myself has a tendency to think of enemies as those who are very far away from me. In fact, those who aren't actually people at all, just a vague face on a distant shadow. But the reality in the heart of the Christian is that unfortunately there are enemies closer than we would like to think them to be, those who have done wrong to us. But first and foremost, before we get into that, we have to recognize humbly that we too are part of those people. We're not just victims going through life, getting insult after insult, wound after wound. No, unfortunately, we've done that to others. Because of our poverty, because of our sinfulness, and we have sinned before the Lord. All of these are things are necessary when we call to mind this notion of forgiveness and how do we grow into it? How do we stretch into it? How do we love our enemies? How do we grow in this capacity to forgive? For forgiving is difficult. Forgiveness is hard. We know that. We hear in this first reading the story of King David before he is the king. And it's a wonderful image for us to meditate upon. To meditate upon. He's being pursued by Saul, chased. His enemy is after him. Saul sees David as a threat, and David sees Saul rightly as a threat because he's trying to kill him. An enemy indeed he is. And David has the happy circumstance of finding him asleep with his spear next to him. And the supposed friend that he is with tells him, now pick up the spear, put it all to an end. Here is your freedom. Here is your security. Here is your stability at your fingertips, right here in the palm of your hand. It's in your control. You can solve it. You can take care of it once and for all. And David does something marvelous. He takes the spear. What a beautiful image of forgiveness. Not something that changes ourselves primarily, but taking the weapon of the other. That's marvelous. It's provocative. It's beautiful. That in David's act of mercy, Saul is changed. He's changed. We don't hear that part of the story, but his spear is taken away. His weapon is gone. And in some sense, they're no longer enemies anymore. That's what happens because of forgiveness. That's what happens when we love our enemies, is they're not an enemy anymore. There's a love that has borne that difference. That being inimical towards another, a love has overcome that. There is a love stronger than death. There is a love stronger than injustice, of pain, of suffering, of wounds. There's a love that can be bigger than those things and hold them together. He takes his spear, and Saul is left without a weapon. But what does this man do? What does he urge David to do but thrust him to the ground and nail him to the ground, it says, with this spear in one swift blow, nailed to the ground. The other person who we remarkably know and see is he who is not nailed to the ground with this spear, but who is nailed to the wood of the cross, whose heart is pierced open with one quick thrust of this spear. A love that bears all things and endures all things. A love that takes these injustices, these lack of loves, and points it at himself, falling on the grenade, so to speak, of our lack of love. He aims these weapons against himself, and by absorbing the blows of the world, that is to say, our blows, he brings healing by the outpouring of his heart. Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. In the face of being absorbed by these blows, these weapons, these nails, these spears, he pours something out. And my brothers and sisters, we can beautifully see in the person of Jesus Christ, that perhaps not focusing so much on healing and letting go, which is certainly an aspect of forgiveness and a necessary one, but we can see more profoundly that the first step towards forgiveness is our conversion. The conversion of our hearts to love like his heart. A love that makes the sun shine on the good and the bad alike, the rain falling upon the just and the wicked, a love without discretion. This is what we're called to as a Christian person, and that requires conversion. Yes, in those moments when someone has offended us deeply, particularly those who we love the most, that's what vulnerability means. They somehow have access to our heart and can wound us. That's what the word vulnerable means, this capacity to be wounded. And yes, there is a dramatic degree of differences of offenses, some very serious and some slight. But anything in between all of those things is a love that we're called to breathe into the world. A love that embraces those wounds that do bring healing, that do allow us to let go and not be stuck in the past and tied up emotionally or mentally, but give us a source of freedom. But underneath all of that is this need for conversion. And when that is the case, we do start to love like him. To love like the sower who went out to sow, who didn't say, this area doesn't have any thorns, it probably won't prick me. This is safe. This isn't a land of my enemies. The path is over there. This ground is carefully cultivated and secure. The sun shines on it. It's not shaded. It's not too hot, though. No, he indiscriminately scatters the seed everywhere. And this is what we're called to love like, my brothers and sisters. And if we but loved in that fashion, and if we but opened our hearts to that kind of love, how different the world would be. How different our lives would be. A beautiful fruitfulness, a wonderful Garden of Eden made new because of these living waters that so gratuitously pour forth from our heart, well up and overflow. What a beautiful love we see, and we recognize that a conversion of our hearts, learning forgiveness, is this way to love our enemies, and by doing so, not to have them anymore. And when this happens, we get to experience in a very profound sense, inwardly, if we but take time to stop and smell the flowers, take time to meditate and truly experience for ourselves the fecundity of this kind of love, of this mercy, this forgiveness, we can taste and see how good the Lord is. We can taste and see for ourselves good gifts, packed down, shaken together, and overflowing